Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper.
I'm your co-host, Hunter Heineman.
What's your name?
Hunter Heineman.
He's also known as the slow coach.
The slow host. Well, you know, he kind of left me high and dry here just a few months back. He had a big event in his life. What happened, Hunter?
I had my first child, baby girl, Keely.
Wow. And she's how old now?
3 months. Like, she'll be 3 months tomorrow.
Wow.
He finally just started getting some sleep last week.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Well, I understand he's quite the diaper changer too.
Oh yeah, I'm becoming a pro.
All right, how fast can you change a diaper?
Oh, not that fast. It depends on the situation.
Oh, I thought you was making fun of me when you were talking about the pants.
Oh yeah.
Oh, quite
well,
a day.
Good to have you back, slow host.
Oh, it really thank is, you. Man. I missed you, and then you know he gets he's having babies, doing all these great things in the world. Then next thing I know, I can't find him, and he's in Africa. What's that all about?
Well, we decided to do a lifelong bucket list trip to Zimbabwe.
And, Zimbabwe.
We went to Zimbabwe. We were on a big hunting concession right on the border of Gunnarejo National Park and the area we hunted. So we were right across the river, and this is a really cool experience. Super fun. A lot of good people over there. And
sounds like it. Hey, how far in advance did you have to plan this trip?
A year.
Yeah, I did an elephant hunt there a couple years ago, and I booked a leopard hunt right after that. And I really just fell in love with the area because it's really true rural Africa. I mean, it's not, you know, certain parts of Africa, you know, you got a lot of the high fence stuff and different type things. And I mean, this is the real deal. I mean, this is the real deal.
It's Teddy Roosevelt real deal.
Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, it's almost like, I mean, if you could picture, you know, we're all from the Ozarks here, but if you could picture an elephant walking through the Mark Twain National Forest, that's what those lands are like. It's really wild and thick and just, you couldn't even imagine, you know, like a lot of times with Africa, you're picturing like, you know, Kenya or, you know, big grasslands, and where this is, it's more wooded.
Bush. It's the bush.
The bush.
Yeah, that's what they call it, the bush.
It is the bush. But it was, so we went there, primary animals we were hunting. I was going for a leopard as my primary animal. Hunter was doing the Cape Buffalo, and we had a wonderful time. We were very successful. It wasn't the easiest hunt in the world, but no. You know, with a little patience, persistence, and prayer, we got the job done. And on day 13 of a 14-day hunt, we harvested the leopard, which was really cool.
Wow, 13 days in.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, I had 1 day left, you know, and then Hunter, you know, Hunter, of course, you know, he nailed all his stuff in the first, like, 3 days,
I guess. Was he a little more aggressive or what?
I don't know. No, I mean, it just worked.
I think it was meant to happen.
Yeah, that lucky coin in his pocket.
It was just one of those things that it all unfolded and
fell into place.
So we had stalked several, you know, and really on the buffalo, you know, you're going after the big Duggar boys, like the big bulls. So you're not like herd hunting, you know. So you go in and find four or five, and stalk in.
You don't want to just roll up on a herd. It's scary.
And again, you literally get within what, Hunter, like
70 yards every time you get in on them.
Wow. Well, they're big beasts too.
Oh yeah. Wow. After when I had harvested it, shot it, it was laying on its stomach. I have pictures of it. It's the back is up to my hip. I'm 5'9" or 5'10". So I'm not really that tall, but it's just like, it laying down is up to your hip.
Still a bulky animal. What do you think it weighed?
Oh, good gosh. I don't know. What do you think,
Dad? I have no idea, but it was a lot. Yeah. I mean, it takes a whole whole village to get it up in the Nissan Safari truck.
Yeah. Yeah, that was crazy to see. But they, it was just such a cool deal. We were checking leopard baits and hanging leopard baits for Dad's leopard. So we would hunt buffalo in the morning. And again, we're only looking for bulls. A lot of times we would go, of course, I shot mine on day two. So yeah. I didn't get to experience it for like 6-7 days like some guys do. And that's pretty grueling.
I have in the past.
Yeah, you didn't miss anything. It's pretty grueling.
Well, see, you just handled that all wrong. My wife used to get on me because I'd kill turkeys on the last day of turkey season. Finally, several years in, she said, you do that on purpose, don't you? I said, well, you do get to hunt longer that way.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so we would start down by the river and pick up tracks, and those trackers are just amazing. They literally can look at a hoof print and say, you know, that's a male or a female. They can look at the scat, the poop, and they can say that's based off of that, that's a female or a male. And they were telling us all about how they did it.
You didn't have to taste it or anything.
No, you didn't have to taste it. They just looked at it. They're smarter than me. But you can
I mean,
see
I tasted it once, but they said I didn't have to. Yeah.
The
you know what it tastes like shit? On the
you wised up, huh?
On the bowl, the poop would be behind where the pee pile was. And on a cow, it's in the same spot.
Uh-huh.
So they were telling us things like that, and I'm like, that is common sense. Like, how do you, but like they are just out in that stuff every day and they see it every day of their life. So they're
And they can even say,
that.
Here's what time it came through because the dew in the morning had covered this up or didn't. It was
do you think, of course, my wheels are turning here and trying to put myself in that situation. Do you think they were just trying to impress you with your knowledge and gain confidence, or is it just an everyday thing to them?
No, it's an everyday thing for them.
Yeah. I mean, and most of the trackers and the villagers that we hunt with there, who are wonderful people, you know, as a young kids, you know, their families raise cattle. And the cattle there, you know, there's like no fences. It's all free range. And so they're going out in this bush looking for their cattle when they're 5-6 years old. And they'll track them and they'll know them by the hoof prints. So they've learned a lot of things from actually tending the livestock and the cattle in the area, too.
So that's where they learned to track is what they told us. But then we would, you know, find that fresh sign and he would just start walking through the bush and you just follow him. But it's the craziest thing because it's like he's going straight in a straight line and you're like, oh, yeah, I can see that footprint. And then you get in this grass that's hip high and it's like, what is this dude looking at? And he is just on a beeline. And he's going, and he's following this animal or animals. And then, you know, the track would get, like, cold. Well, it doesn't stop. They just stop. They know the last spot they found a track was, and they kind of do, like, a perimeter-like search. And then they'll pick it up in a different area, maybe 100 yards away, and then we take off again. And
it'll be just, like, the big one went this way.
Yeah. And then it'll be like 4 or 5 went that way, 1 went this way, and 1 went to the left. You know, it's like, how do they? It's just crazy to see it. But
we don't question them. We just know at the end of the track, there's a bunch of buffalo.
Yeah.
So they're doing something right.
Yeah. But what are you thinking when you're walking through that tall grass?
Hopefully, I don't run into a buffalo.
Well, not only the buffalo, but like a spitting cobra or a puff adder or a black mamba. I mean, those are the ones that scare. I walked when I was there elephant hunting. I walked up on a spitting cobra, and Robert the tracker and then the professional hunter were in front of me, and I was lagging behind because they're way better shape than I am. And all of a sudden, I saw this cobra head go up, and it looked just like one you see on TV. And I'm like, and I'm trying to go snake, you know, and I didn't even know what it was. And the film person behind me. And Afrikaners yelled out whatever this word snake was, and they took off running.
I heard a story. Guys, probably been 20 years ago. I can't remember who it was. Had gone to Africa hunting, and the outfitter they had, the facilities they stayed in. Well, the bathroom facilities were outside, and it was just an old outhouse, you know, like a 2 or 3 holer, you know. And they went sit down on one of these holes, and a black mama sticks his head up out there, you know.
Oh, yeah, that would not be cool.
That would not be cool to get bitten rear end by a black mama.
Yeah, I go, what happens if you get bit by a black mama? And Ben said, well, He goes, you can either, you know, take it slow or fast. And I go, what's fast? And he held up a 416 bullet. He goes, either way, you're
going to die.
So that was kind of cool. But, you know, we were hunting with a, and I think, Bill, I think you had Fonnie Stein, the owner of Fabo Memorial here.
I mean, were you hunting with the same people?
Same people, great family, just, I mean, good Christian people, just awesome to hunt with.
Their
camp is, you know, it's a tent camp, but they have like these donkey boilers and it runs off solar. And the donkey boilers, you know, for the hot water for the shower is the wood, the Mopane. What was it? Mitsubishi wood or something like that, too?
Yeah, Mitsubishi.
I can't. Wow. I'm probably saying that way wrong, but it's just neat. You know, you go out, you get firewood with them, you know, and you just see how they actually put that camp together. And it's very, very nice camp.
Oh, it sounds like, and by the way, he did a wonderful job on the podcast. You didn't talk him into coming back, so we'd do another one, did you?
Oh, yeah, he'll come back. We're going to see him at Safari Club in Nashville again this year. And
awesome.
I think we're going down with Ben. He's going to do the Dallas Safari Club show in Atlanta. We're going to be there, too. So, yeah, we'll get a chance to interview him again. They're really, really knowledgeable on all things African hunting, whether it's buffalo, elephant, whatever. We also got a spotted hyena.
Yeah,
which was a cool deal. Big old spotted hyena. And the first night we went out, we had some hyenas that were hitting the bait, you know, for the leopard. And we're like, okay, we're going to kind of do a practice run. We're going to go out and do this hyena hunt. And I brought this blind from guide gear because we're part of the Campfire Project, which is to bring the tribal communal lands, you know, into the reason they have so many elephant and these animals there is because the actual communal lands, the people that live there share into the permit cost and the overall hunt. And that's why, you know, they're not like killing the elephants for all the ivory and poaching them and everything else, because that's a real plus. But, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen at all, but other parts of Africa, when they've taken away the money part for the local villagers, then there's no other thing for them to do but poach it and sell it to the Chinese or whatever. So it was, wow. It's kind of a neat project, but the hyena, we went out the first night and I'm in this guide gear, you know, pop up whitetail blind and all of a sudden it gets dark and it's pitch black. I mean, black, you can't even see your hand, like 6 inches in front of your face.
Sitting in a ground blind at night.
Sitting in a ground blind waiting for a leopard or a hyena to come up. And we weren't in the blind.
Did blood pressure go up?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
We weren't in the blind 10 minutes and I hear, whoa, and it's a herd of elephants, like just a few hundred yards away. And I'm like, man, you didn't really think this through. Not only are you dumb enough to sit in this blind in the middle of the night in Africa with elephants walking by that can stomp on you, you're waiting for a leopard or a hyena, and you're actually goofy enough to bring your son in on this action so that we can both get stomped on. You know, and I'm like, man, what am I thinking? But it was a really cool deal. We had a hyena come in, it jumped the light a couple times, and then we had one walk up like 5 feet from the blind.
Yeah, that kind of busted
us. Yeah, Hunter moved his leg, busted us. And ended up harvesting a beautiful, big, big spotted hyena. I mean, the thing was very, very large. Made Safari Club record book by a couple inches on the skull.
Yeah. Really? Well, awesome. Congratulations. That's quite a feat.
Yeah, it was very cool. The craziest thing, when you walk up on one of those, you know, you watch TV and you see them on TV and stuff, and you're like, oh, it's going to be like 60, maybe 70 pounds. No, it was over 100.
Like over 150 pounds.
Yeah, she's a big freaking dog. And then not only that, you know, I thought the guides were messing with me when they were telling me that they have both sex organs, male and female.
You can't tell them apart.
Yeah, Daryl told me that.
You guys are pulling my leg.
I'm thinking he's yanking my chain. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing Daryl told me.
Which I don't know how they identify it, but the females, they say, are bigger.
So the female is the one that can actually conceive and have a baby, but right. They all have the same part. They so when you kill one, style. You don't know which one's what. But historically, the female, the one that actually bears, you know, kids, is the bigger of the two, and this one was extremely big.
Yeah, I think it was a female.
And then after you know, we took it, we had like the rest of the little herd of hyenas back there doing a little
laughing.
And I'm like, man, yipping. This is eerie. Yeah.
Well, they're a big, powerful animal, powerful jaws.
Oh yeah,
right. So they're. They're taking down a lot of plains game, that
really
sort of thing, I guess.
Big, long neck and a big, blocky head. But
of course, they hunt in packs, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They do.
Yeah. We had a whole bunch of them around there.
Walking up on them, though, was just like,
And its eyes are red. They look like a little demon, you know, pretty weird. But, you know, jumping back, we're going back. I'm going to jump back into the Cape Buffalo because Hunter, for his first hunt, you know, he used my 500 Nitro double rifle, which if you ever get a chance to shoot one of those and you want to knock your teeth out, it's really a fun thing to practice with. But, you know, Hunter, the guide, Ben, who, you know, we got to know Ben and Fonnie real well. And it's like, hey, you really need to practice that. You need to shoot well over 100 rounds. Which Hunter did, blew his shoulder off, you know.
Wow, it's really the first two shooting times was the worst. And then after that, it's just kind of like, okay. Here it comes.
Yep.
It's gonna kick.
But to Hunter's credit, this was kind of cool. So we had did a few stalks and were not successful. And we were going to go back that afternoon and try to pick up the tracks. We had pushed them
We were checking the leopard baits. And it was like midday.
Yeah, it was midday. And then with the leopard baits, you know, you'll take like, you know, entrails from whatever you hunted and you're hanging in the tree. Well, they do tracks. So they would run a track. We'd take the truck around. They'd come back. And Robert and John, the two guys that from the village there, came back. And they're like, we got a huge Cape Buffalo bedded down right on the edge of the Winzy River. And we're like, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And Ben goes, I bet it's this one. And he pulled up a picture from the year before, and he goes, that's a really good bull. That's him.
Old one.
Wow. So he knew the bull, man.
He knew the bull. Uh-huh. So we sneak.
That's cool.
So before we go down, though, this was the crazy part. So the river is the dividing line between the national park and their concession. So if that buffalo gets over on the other side, it's like a $5,000 fine.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Now, you can go get the animal, and we're actually hunting with a park ranger the whole time. He hunted with us the whole time.
His name was Sam.
Sam, great guy. I can't say enough about the staff at the National Park over there and everybody that we got to know. But we're hunting there, and it's right on the line. And I go, okay, Ben, Hunter's going to be kind of wigged out anyway. Don't tell him about the fine. I go, let's just go up there, and I'm going to tell him.
Stay and wash dishes.
I'm going to tell him he's got to drop it before it crosses the river. So anyway, he goes, okay. And we get up there, we're under 30 yards from this buffalo.
Wow.
And I look up, and I finally see its head.
We were stalking down from like a
vantage point,
a rock bluff kind of going down to him. So we had height advantage, which was good for the bush because you could see better. But where he was at, he was kind of in the open.
Yeah, so he's down
but my
there.
Question is, how long does it take a buffalo to cover 30 yards?
Oh, not very long. Not very long. No, pretty. They're pretty fast. For as big as they are, they're pretty quick. So we come down to the edge, and I'm just looking up, and the camera, Zani, our camera person, was behind us, and she's trying to get the shot. And I look up, and that buffalo's looking right at us. And I'm like, you know, and he was bedded down, so he was sleeping, and it's chewing its cud, and it's facing us, and I'm like, how in the world is the guide going to tell Hunter to do that shot? Is he going to have him just, like, crank him, right?
You know, point
eyes. Right in the head.
Yeah, and I'm like, that's pretty risky with the river right there, you know? Hunter got up, he got on the sticks, and right about the time he's getting ready for the shot,
I said, is his head facing me, or what end is what? And then I had my gun up on the shooting sticks, and he was right to my right. And about that time, that buffalo stuck his head up, and I was like, oh, crap, it's about to go down. And then he stood up, and I got bared down on the rifle, and he turned broadside, and he took about two gallops, and I just put it on his shoulder and and shot, hit him right behind the shoulder because he was moving. That was probably 30, 35 yards or something, and then he ran maybe 10 yards. At that time, there was so much going on, I didn't really even know if I hit him. If I had hit him.
He hit him good and he knocked him down, but he was still where he could get up.
But then he ran like 10, 15 yards, and Ben moved me over to the right. He goes, Do you see him? And I said, yep. He goes, shoot him. So the second round, he was quartering to me. And I hit him actually like in the very front of the shoulder, and it just, it went like through his whole chest cavity and everything and popped out the backside of his rib.
But as powerful as that 500 Nitro Express, it's a Krieghoff Big 5 Classic, that bullet
that a double rifle?
Still did not penetrate all the way through the buffalo, and that was
one kid. Yeah.
No, so we got there, and Hunter felt, you know, I'm like, well, yeah, I think that's your bullet. Took a case knife and cut through it and pulled the bullet out.
Really?
And
you,
it,
you
it,
kept
it,
that, I guess.
All of them went through except that one, and I think that was the first shot.
Yeah.
But then I, yeah, he had me shoot it a third time from up there on the bluff. I reloaded, and I shot him. He was laying down with his back facing us, so I shot him through the back.
Just an insurance shot.
Yeah, just to make sure he was really down. And then you could tell he was getting ready to expire.
And, that's what our guide said. I didn't even get to shoot.
Yeah, he goes, oh, man, I didn't even get to shoot. And we all started laughing. And the pressure was off at that point.
That's what I said.
Kind of lightened the mood a little bit.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That's when I said, hey, Hunter, I didn't tell you. If he'd have got across the river, that would have been $5,000.
Yeah, I was like, well, good thing he didn't go that way.
Yeah, no kidding. But, boy, what an exciting adventure, though. And it's your first time experiencing Cape Buffalo?
First time in Africa, first African animal was the buffalo.
Wow, that's a pretty good start. Well, did you get so excited or scared or whatever that you trembled at any point?
Tell the truth now. I was definitely shaken. I was definitely shaken. And the weird thing, like I knew.
Well, tell him what Ben said when you got on the sticks. Control your breathing, right?
Oh, no, man. He didn't tell me that.
Oh, he told me that.
He told you that. On the leopard.
Yeah, way to go, Dad. You know what? Try to dump it off on your son. Huh?
The buffalo is just kind of like, yeah, I'm going to get trampled and ran over. But the leopard, it's like, he's going to eat me.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're hunting something that's going to eat you, it's just a little bit different.
Yeah,
deal.
It's two different
things. Well, I want to back up in this whole scenario because one of the important things to me always is I like to find out from people because, you know, you plan this for 2 years. You build up, you know, and there's a big crescendo of excitement when you're taking that animal. But what was the anticipation like prior to this hunt? And did that anticipation grow to fever as you got ready to leave?
You know, for me, Bill, I've been, as long as I can remember, even younger than Hunter, you know, I've hunted all over the world, you know.
And yeah.
One thing there's huge anticipation, but I think one of the biggest things that when you're a big game hunter and you're going all over the world is that, you know, you can sometimes let the anticipation and then what it costs and a lot of things get in the way, and it can end up being a negative experience. So we have some great video because even on day 13 of a 14-day hunt, I mean, I'm having a good time. I'm cutting up because I don't like going into that, like putting so much pressure on myself that I'm going to make a mistake. Right?
Or the guides, you know,
because a lot of guys, you know, they start getting, hey, you know, I this is really expensive and, you know, what's going on? And then they try to start telling them what to do. Well, they know what to do. Right?
Well, sure they do.
And sometimes it's just giving them a little bit of room too to just say like, look, this guy's not a jerk. But
sounds to me like you need to teach a course on
hunt management.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, well, exactly. Just don't get too hung up on it. But we were day 13. We're sitting there and we had parked the truck. We're waiting for the guys to come back, checking some baits. And I put some music on. And it was one of those deals where I'm like, this might not happen, you know, because you're right there at the end of the deal. And we had had a bait that got hit by a big male a couple times, but it
never
we couldn't
back.
Come back. It like gorged itself one night. And you're looking for tracks that are over 2.5 inches wide. So you want a real big male. And you can only shoot a male. You can't shoot a female. So just imagine being in a blind. The animal's 75 to 100 yards away. It's an animal that can eat you. And not only do you have to make sure, you have to then make sure it's a male. So you have to identify a male leopard in the best way that you can only do it by looking for a set of nuts, right?
Yeah.
So it just kind of makes it a little more intense. But, you know, day 13, I'm like, okay, guys, we're in the bottom of the eighth inning coming up tonight. I said, we still got the ninth inning the next day. But I said, you know what we're going to do? We're not going to stop believing. And I started playing that Journey song, Don't Stop Believing. Had the whole crew back there singing with
us. There you go. Lighten the mood.
We shot a leopard
that night. Yeah. But it was a fluke deal. I mean, and this is the weirdest thing, where my elephant was, literally we were within a quarter mile where the two animals were on. I'm talking hundreds of thousands of hectares we had available to hunt. And it just all came
panned out that way.
Yep.
Well, that made for a great memory. Well, guys, we're going to take just a short break here, but don't go away because we got some more exciting tales coming right out of Africa.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browls the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey, this is John from CoAngler.com. Did you know that CoAngler.com is the newest online platform to connect anglers for fishing trips? You can create your free account, offer and request fishing trips, connect with anglers in your area, share some costs, share some knowledge, and share a great time in the outdoors. Whether you're fishing from a boat and you got an extra seat and want somebody to come with you, or you need some help shuttling those kayaks for your next float trip, CoAngler is a great way to connect with like-minded anglers in your area for a great time out on the water. So get on CoAngler.com and let's go fishing.
Hey there, listeners. At Conservation Federation of Missouri, we're more than just advocates for our environment. We're active in making a difference through hands-on programs that protect and preserve Missouri's natural resources. By becoming a member, you're supporting impactful initiatives like Share the Harvest, which provides venison to families in need, and Operation Game Thief, which helps combat poaching and protects our wildlife. You're also contributing to the RISPR grants, which fund local conservation projects across the state. Your membership makes these vital programs possible, ensuring that we continue to serve both our communities and our environment. Plus, as a member, you'll receive updates on these programs, invitations to exclusive events, and the opportunity to get involved in the work you care about most. Visit confedmo.org/join to learn more and to join us today. Together, we can support programs that protect Missouri's wildlife, waters, and way of life. Be a part of the Conservation Federation of Missouri, where action leads to conservation.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Hey everybody, this is Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. Check out my buddy's podcast show, Living the Dream Outdoors with Bill Cooper and Hunter Hindman. You're really going to enjoy this week's show.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. Hey, I got the Hindmans here today, father, son, Daryl Hindman and Hunter. These guys just got back from Africa. Is this the best trip of your life?
Oh, it was definitely one of them. Yeah,
it was for me, for sure.
I've had some pretty good ones, you know, like with polar bear in the Arctic and different things. But to be able to share this one with your son,
absolutely,
it was really cool. But you know, one thing about leopard hunting that was very unique is that that had probably always been one of my number one African animals I wanted was a leopard. I ended up doing the elephant first because. I wanted to experience wild Africa, you know, in the open like this area, you know, like real deal hunting, instead of sitting in a blind in Africa the whole time. So leopard hunting is really tedious. It takes a lot of time, and it's more about all the preparation, setting the baits and, you know, checking the tracks and the game cameras.
And putting the time in.
And putting the time in, yeah. And you have to have enough time, and that's why it's a 14-day minimum hunt. But, you know, if we had not had that, it would have been kind of difficult. But it was one of those things that it's, like, really kind of boring. So you got to have a good time while you're driving around, have the right frame of mind. But then all of a sudden, when you get one that hits, and you got to go set that blind up and be in the blind by, like, 3:30 for a hunt where you might sit there till 2 in the morning. You know,
wow.
After dark, it's just
a haul.
It's kind of like a real amp up, you know, like from nothing to fast.
You got to be dead quiet.
Yeah.
Because it is just, I don't know, it's a different kind of quiet over there. And those predators are just, they're different.
Yeah, they smell good. They hear good. There's everything. There's not
another level
that they don't have. But the leopard was kind of cool. It was on this little creek bed. Where we set it, we actually had the blind where, you know, right off the edge of the creek, and we had to get in there in a hurry. We wanted to get set up by no later than 3:30, 4 o'clock, and we got it all done. And again, you got a great staff that works for Thaba Mwoyo and Bob, all them. I mean, they really know what they're doing. But we get in there, it's totally dark, and I have a lighted reticle on my 375 H&H Magnum, and the thing kind of like turns off, and you got to turn it back on about every 5 minutes. So it had just got dark. You couldn't see. And, you know, the cool thing is you have like an infrared camera down there where the bait is. And the main reason for that is when there's movement, it buzzes. Okay. So you don't have to shine the light to identify it. And then you actually look on your phone and you are determining between you and your professional hunter, is this a male? Does it have nuts or not?
You know? Uh-huh.
And so it's kind of intense. So I'm looking through my red dot, right, when it was dark, and we could see nothing, and I'm trying to turn it on, and it comes on, and it's right at just, I mean, really early, because, you know, sometimes you might have to wait till like 2 in the morning.
6:15.
Like 6:15, maybe 20 minutes after it got black. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, man, that looks like a different color spot at the bottom of that tree. I go, it's a little lighter. And I go, those look like spots. And I'm like, man, that looks like a leopard's face looking at me. And then I'm like, there is no way that leopard's here that quick. Your mind is playing games on you. You know how at dusk sometimes, like even with deer,
yeah.
You know, you're deer like,
turkeys both.
Yeah, is that a deer? Is that a turkey? You know? And, you know, you got to have patience with that because that's how sometimes accidents happen, right? So I'm sitting there going, is that thing looking at me? And then all of a sudden it moved and it came around the tree and it stood up on the tree. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Well, the little sensor thing for the camera didn't go off.
Oh my.
So I tap on Ben's leg, the professional hunter, and I'm like, you know, we had a signal like 2 taps, there's a leopard there. And he grabs that thing and he's like, yeah. And so we're looking at it and he goes, does that look like a ball sack there? I'm like, yeah, but, you know, it's your license. So let's make sure what we got here, you know? And he goes, yeah, but it's your fight. I'm like, okay, well, let's check it out, you know? So we were, we determined that it was a male. And then, you know, you have a torch light, and he flipped it on. And well, how long did I wait before I shot?
Like, it wasn't even like a second. It was, like,
it was on it, huh?
Tick, boom.
Was a leopard on the bait? Or?
Oh, yeah. By now, it had jumped up in the tree.
Right.
You know, it was on a limb. It was stretching out, actually, you know, tearing shreds of the bait and the meat out and everything. So anyway, it was a really good shot. So I thought, and I thought I saw it fall out, but as soon as I shot, all hell broke loose. And, you know, we were on the edge of the creek. Well, to me, it looked like it fell out of the tree, hit pretty good. But then I heard something like I thought cross the creek. And then all of a sudden, like, it was crazy, like all kinds of noise. Well, come to find out, there was a herd of buffalo
off
just, 50 yards from us on the other side of the creek. So I thought the leopard, I'm like, and I actually said, oh, shit, I thought I missed a shot because I thought I heard this leopard run around. It was Cape Buffalo. And we go in there and we didn't go in there. He's like, no, those are buffalo. We rewatched the shot a bunch of times. We called the whole crew to come in with more torch lights because now we got to do a look for this leopard in the dark.
Oh, boy. Now the excitement level goes up, huh?
Way up. So, and again, I was excited.
Now, did the hunter go with you? He's going to
back
you up?
Oh, he was in the blind. Yeah. We had the game ranger from, you know, the parks department.
Okay, had a whole crew.
Had a whole crew. A guy from government lands, a good guy named Coodsy, and we had Robert the tracker.
I'm going to change my name.
You need to change your name. Yeah. Coodsy Bill.
Yeah.
So, so when we went over there, you know, Ben, who, you know, they're like family to us now, but he goes, hey, it's wintertime when you come over here this time. He goes, so, you know, it can get rather cold. It can go from like 32 degrees up to 90 during the day. And he's like, you know, the best thing to hunt in the blind is like just the old coveralls from Cabela's, like the one piece coveralls, like quilted. I'm like, okay. So we bought some. Well, we're from Missouri, not Africa. So we put these on and it's like, it was 180 degrees.
Dying.
We got the legs unzipped, you know, just kind of pulled over. But you did kind of need it as the sun went down, the longer you sit in these blinds. But it was really hot. So the leopard's down. We're all excited. We think it's a good shot, but we're not sure because the buffalo ran off. And so now it's serious. And Ben gets up and he says, okay, well, we got to go in now and find this leopard. And he goes, now this is serious. And he goes, so if we get in here, if a leopard jumps on one of us, it's going to jump on somebody. He goes, all hell's going to break loose. It's going to be trying to scratch your guts out, chew your head off, everything else. He goes, so under no circumstance if that leopard gets on top of me, do you shoot down into the leopard? He goes, you get down on one knee and you rake it off the guy. He goes, and I'll do the same for you because it could be on you, Hunter. Could be on you, Daryl, whoever.
And you're supposed to remember all this.
And Hunter's got, so Hunter has the 500 Nitro 2 for backup and I got my 375, Ben's got a 416. So we had firepower, right? But we go in there, and this was really intense, but this is funny. Hunter goes, okay, Ben, before we go in, I'm going to take this onesie off from Cabela's because I'm dying. I'm hot. I'm so hot, I can't stand it. And he goes, well, I'd rather you didn't. And Hunter goes, why? And he goes, that's one more layer it might have to scratch through.
That make you feel better?
No,
so,
not at all.
So Hunter took the thing, and he zipped it all the way up to his neck.
All the way up to my neck.
He goes, I can handle the heat. So we walk in there and the leopard, you know, it really didn't go, what do you think, 30 yards probably.
20, 30 yards, yeah.
But, you know, when it wasn't right underneath the tree, then we got to find the blood. And then that was the most intense tracking follow-up 30-yard deal I ever did in my life.
About like a mile.
Again, you know, you got three guys with torches. And, you know, the camera person's like, okay, Robert, the tracker, put this GoPro on your chest. And I'm thinking, well, that's going to make for good footage, you know. The guy's got a light and a GoPro. So we follow the track and we get in there and, you know, we're like, blood, blood, blood. And Ben's like, don't worry about the blood. Look for eyes, you know. So we're, you know, they have the flashlights and they're looking. We come up to the edge of the creek, and the blood goes right down to the creek. And one of the guys with us, he goes, I see eyes. And he's shaking the light, you know, across the deal. Ben runs up with the 416, and he goes, Goodsy, that's bird shit. And so anyway, when he ran up to the edge, and I'm thinking there's eyes there, I had went over to the right, just maybe from a different angle. And I looked down 5 yards in front of Ben, the professional hunter. That leopard is laying in the creek dead. And I look down, I see spots. And they were shining right over the top.
That's when you're really happy it's dead.
Then. That thing been crouched down and ready to attack, it would have easily done it. But beautiful big male leopard. It was old. It had a fang, you know, broken off.
And a leopard is really bigger than what most of us would think.
Yeah, they're bigger than, much bigger than a mountain lion here in the States, you know.
Wow.
I mean, and this one was, you know, the skull scored to make Safari Club International record.
17.
But, yeah, it made it.
14 just gets it in the books or whatever, and it was 17.
I think it might be bigger than that. But anyway, it didn't really matter to me whether it made it in the books or not, but it made it in my book, and I was thrilled. Nice, big, mature leopard.
Wow, that is absolutely what counts. Well, I can identify with some of that stuff just a little bit. I had an experience down in Yucatan a few years ago. I was on a panga back in the jungle filming a guy tarpon fishing. I want to get out on this little spit of sand. I want to get off and film, get a different angle, you know, frontal view. And the little guy, he couldn't speak English very well, but he said, no, senor, crocodiles. I said, I'll stay in the boat. You know, so you can change your mind real quick about things when reality really hits.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all right. All this excitement, adrenaline builds up. You know, you find the animal. again, do you get the shakes after the fact? Does the excitement, and the adrenaline, and
I don't really remember shaking necessarily, but I mean to try to say that none of that was there is absolutely not true. I mean, one thing about, you know how, like, the first deer you ever shot.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And if there's ever a point in my life where some of that excitement is gone, you know.
Great point.
Then, you know, I don't know. That's what it's kind of about. You know, if you don't get a little excited, a big old buck walks up, or big old tom turkey, or whether it's a leopard or whatever. But it does take your senses to an all new level when it's dark and you're removing some of the advantage of daylight out and you're actually out there. And again, you know we have rifles and all that kind of stuff, but the bottom line is it's just you're a little more one-on-one. And then when you get that, like when you're hunting a Cape buffalo, I mean, you know, it'd be nothing to walk out there and try to pop one at 200 yards or something, you know, but to be able to walk up to it, like the guys used to hunt, you know, and get within, you know, under 50 yards of a big old buffalo that could come right on top of you. That's kind of what it's all about at that point.
It really is. Well, change direction just a little bit here. Some people are critical of guys going to Africa and shooting animals, you know.
Sure.
But what most of them do not realize is how things operate there. You, all of you guys, and I know that if it wasn't for the American hunter, really, and the dollars that we spend in Africa, most of those animals that you're hunting would already be extinct.
Well, and I'm going to give a lot of credit here to the, you know, the game departments in countries like Zimbabwe. You know, they when you put a value on the animal, it actually is good for conservation, because if we go to that village and, you know, they have your cooks there, you know, people cleaning the camp, and they keep the crew that run this hunting concession employed all year, you know, even though they're not hunting all year. So, Fani and, you know, his whole crew, you know, that's their job, and that's a really good job in that area. And if you've never been to a country like this, I mean, it's good to see. And, I mean, they're supporting their whole families with money, and not just American hunters, but hunters from all over the world, you know, that go in there. But the reason they have good game populations is because they didn't take the money part out of what that animal's worth. Right. And then everybody from the village permit cost, everything, everybody shares into that. So that's why they have a good population of elephants. I mean, in the national park, and I'm not a biologist or anything like that, but I think they got like 14 or 15,000 elephants with a carrying capacity of about 8,000 to 10,000. And one reason they have success there is because of what we're talking about, you know, because in and around that national park, they've made the animals important to the people that live in the area. And without that, you know, to them, it's just something else. They could, you know, shoot that elephant for the ivory and ship it off somewhere. You know?
Exactly.
Or a rhino horn or whatever.
Right. But the meat from these animals that are taken, does it go to the villagers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They eat everybody.
They actually ate the leopard.
They eat the leopard.
Oh, yeah. Well, I understand. I've never tried mountain lion, but I understand it's pretty good.
They said that they thought that it would give them the leopard strength.
Oh, okay. But still a good source of protein. Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah. I heard you talking to somebody, Daryl, a week or two ago about when you killed the elephant, how many people showed up to take that meat.
There was probably 300 or 400, you know, from the villages there. And it's neat. I mean, you know, then you would drive through and you'd see all the biltong, you know, where they dry the meat, like, you know, jerky. Right. I mean, that's how they did. They did that with the buffalo that Hunter took. And one thing I tell you we did eat that I really, really enjoyed, Hunter got a really beautiful water buck. And that was some of the best meat I think we ever had.
It was very good.
It reminded me more of a deer.
Yeah.
A little bit different, but I mean.
Sweeter.
It was
really good.
Yeah. Good. So how'd they cook it? Just grilled? Or?
Just grilled it, yeah.
I think they had it on the open fire.
Yeah. Yeah, he
bried it on the open
fire. Yeah, they call barbecuing is brying over there, but they would take, literally he'd start a campfire and then he'd take a shovel and scoop up the hot coals, and he had this concrete barbecue area, and he'd put all the hot coals in there, and then he had this little grate that swung over it, and that was kind of cool. So we made a lot of the game on there. The buffalo was really good. It was like a very, very lean steak. It was a little tough because that animal was like 14 years old. It wasn't like too tough though. It was just a little chewy. It was just an old buck or something.
Sure. But it was good. It was really good.
Yeah. And then I got a baboon too. I kind of ended up taking a baboon as well.
They're a big, scary looking creature too. Got some serious teeth on them.
They're bigger than you think.
He was missing a hand.
Yeah. What was that all about?
It had got caught in a gin trap. So it was like all healed and everything. And he was fine and he was living without that hand. But that was from a gin trap.
A gin trap is a trap they make out of homemade wires and, you know, just wire they put.
So that's poachers doing that.
It's poachers doing that. Yeah. And and again, there are poachers over there. I mean, I'm not going to say that there isn't.
We found those snares, remember? People trying to snare for guinea fowl and rabbits and stuff.
And
they even small game.
Yeah. And the locals can actually snare legally, but they got to do it out of, instead of like rope or, you know, plastic, it has to be actually how they did it 100 years ago. So, but yeah, we saw a lot of great animals, like helmeted and crested guinea fowl, which is their turkeys.
Right.
I would love to have been able to hunt a couple of those. That was really cool. But I think the one's protected.
Bush buck, impala, zebra. We saw a giraffe. We saw elephants.
Yeah. What an experience.
Did we see anything else? We saw a bunch of little monkeys. I think that's about it.
Yeah, well, I assume you took lots of photos
and stuff.
Oh yeah, we got plenty. But I will say this: if anybody's listening and they want a referral for any type of African hunting, Thaba Mamoyo, just give us a call. We'd love to share their number with you, put you in direct contact with them. You can come visit them. You know, we do the Safari Club show every year, and we'll have a booth there again this year. But they're there too, and if you get a chance to meet them, come on out and meet them because they're really good people. So if you've ever had a dream of going to Africa, highly recommend this group.
Well, I got to meet the owner of your operation you're hunting with face to face. Did a podcast with him. Very impressive gentleman.
Yes.
And we think of Africa sometimes as being so remote, you know, so backward and that sort of thing. But I'm sure the culture is entirely different, and you may feel like you're stepping back a bit. But you still got gentlemen like this who, hey, up to snuff on everything.
In true conservationists and from a hunting standpoint, I mean, you know, the way they manage their lands and everything they do is to be commended. It's really a cool thing to see. But, and knowledgeable on everything. I mean, you know, one thing, and we might do it, we haven't had a chance, but he's one of the specialists that for night hunting for all the different, like, serval. What else was there? Like, honey badgers.
Civet
cats. I mean, like, if people want to slam on those African cats, they...
You don't even think about those animals for the most part.
And, like, the little antelope, like the tiny tin, you know? A lot of people go after these little animal, like...
Diker.
Zani went out and guided for a red diker the day after we left, and it's got a beautiful one. But, I mean, they're just little... cool little antelope, but
so there's more than the big five to hunt.
There's more than the
tiny ten. There's all the African cats, and then you got the plains game.
Wow, plenty to do in Africa. So, have you planned the next trip yet?
We're talking about it. I'm sure we're going to do something over there. Yeah, for me, I think I think I'd like to do a hippo and a croc. You know?
Oh, crocodiles. So
like rhino hunting, you know, it's kind of a thing of the past, but they do have something now where you can go out and green dart them. You go out with a veterinarian, it's part of conservation, and you get to actually shoot it with the dart, and then you get pictures taken, which is not the same totally as hunting, but based upon where the population levels are for the rhino, it's really kind of a cool alternative.
Sounds like it. Yeah. It'd be great to have your photo with a rhino and just hope he doesn't get up.
Right. Hope he doesn't wake up. And if he does get up, I just got to make sure I can outrun one of you guys if I'm hunting.
Well, there you go. He's always got a plan.
Or you just grab a hold of his horn and
take a ride.
Take a ride. Hey, I heard a story about Ralph Dern was in on this. I can't remember who the shooter was out in Colorado. Big elk hunt. I think it was Jeff Probst. But elk's just tearing up this bush, and Jeff had maneuvered a little bit, and the elk hadn't bugled in a while, so Ralphie thought he would help Jeff out, not realizing that Jeff was very close to this big bull elk. So Ralph calls, and the elk bugles, and he runs the 5 yards up the bush that Jeff is hiding behind, runs his antlers through it. He's beating up this tree, and one of his antlers hits Jeff in the chest and goes up under the strap of his suspenders.
Oh, no.
And the bull takes off with him dangling on his rack. And Ralph just laughed. He said, that Jeff said that ride lasted for a half an hour. And I'm telling you, it wasn't over 10 seconds. But yeah. Broke his bow and all kinds of things. But what a ride.
Now, is Ralph...
Duran.
Is he the one that you share the birthday with? Or is
yeah.
He, okay. So his birthday was yesterday, too.
Yeah, well, or it's been a couple of days. Yeah. Yeah. August 1st, Ralph Duran and I, yeah, share a birthday together. And Ralph was known, you know, he worked about 30 years for the conservation department. And his job title was animal impersonator. He could do like 130 different wildlife sounds with his mouth. Incredible. Mm. Incredible guy.
That's pretty cool.
It is
so
cool.
So was he related to the Duran that was spoke at the CWD thing with Driftwood?
No, I don't think they're any relation.
It's the same last name, though.
Same last name.
Okay. Yeah. I just assumed I thought maybe they were related.
Too, and Ralph was there, and I talked to him for just a moment. No, they no kin. All right, shift gears here just a little bit. One of you guys or both of you, tell us real quick about Living the Dream Outdoor Properties.
Yeah, sure. So, Hunter, go right ahead.
Don't be bashful.
Hey, I'll jump in there. Actually, you know, Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we got a really good crew. We got some awesome salespeople and staff. So if you're in the market to buy, you know, sell or anything to do with all things farm, ranch, and recreational land, you know, we can help you out. And some, you know, sometimes I hear, oh gosh, you know, does my property qualify for what you do? You got all these really cool big properties. To be quite honest, you know, it could be a quarter acre on the river. And that fits our niche just the same as a $4 million place, you know, on the river. So keep us in mind for all things farm, ranch, and recreational type properties. And that's what we specialize in. And we got some of the best people in the Midwest on it.
Hey, I can vouch for all of that. And folks, from Hunter Heinemann, Daryl Heinemann, and myself, Bill Cooper, we're living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and live your dreams as well.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you. You could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Pico Lures, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, Expedition Trailers, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.